Blog Talk Radio.
Time now for Lydia's Literary Lowdown on Greater Good Ministries Radio. Join Lydia at 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern every Saturday and get the lowdown on today's popular authors, publishers, and pundits. Lydia's Literary Lowdown, right here on GGM Radio, every Saturday, 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern.
Welcome to another episode of Lydia's Literary Lowdown. I am so very happy to welcome back author Betsy Otter Thompson. You may remember her from us discussing her What Happens If book last season, but I have brought her right back around this season because she has a new book called Love Parent out. What inspired you to come up with this book, Betsy?
Well, I really got inspired because a friend of mine was having some parenting issues, and some of her parenting issues were the same ones that I had had. And once I had knew that I had this gift of being able to communicate with spirit, whether it was my spirit or another spirit, I decided that this was a good subject to tackle because I had a feeling I learned something myself a lot from having these questions. And so I just wrote down a bunch of questions that I wanted to have answered, and that's how the book began, just asking questions and getting them answered. And I was surprised by some of the answers, and some of the chapter headings that came up surprised me, but I went with it, and the book is the result.
I think you've thought of everything. I mean, if someone were to ask me what distinguishes Love Parent from the other parenting books on shelves you can find, it would be that you literally go all the way through childhood. You start from thought and you travel all the way into adolescence. Was that something that just flowed as you went along? Did you start out with that in mind that you were going to take it through adolescence?
No, I had no idea really how the book was going to form. I was surprised myself because the book really comes from a point of view of spirit, before it gets here, why it comes here, the reasons that it comes here, and how it plans the journey and how it chooses everything from the actual planet it wants to rebirth into, to the parents, to the sex it wants to be, to the talents it wants to have and everything. And so that was kind of a surprise to me. I didn't really think of coming here in that light before. And so the book is different from other books because it comes from spirit's point of view instead of our point of view. You know, what is spirit? Why is spirit coming here? And what's it all about? And so that to me was very refreshing. And then when the first chapter, when I got the message of what the first chapter was going to be, I was sort of blown away. You know, do you even want to be a parent? I thought, well, you know, that's starting it where it really begins. You know, are you making a wise decision to be a parent in the first place? You know, and so I was surprised. You know, I was beautifully surprised and delightfully surprised, and it helped me a lot with my parenting skills, even though my children were not young when I wrote it. But it certainly helped me to get my focus where I needed to have it in terms of what being a good parent is all about.
And what I love about that is that modeling behavior. It's not about platitudes that you sit down and have discussions with your child. You literally, in Love Parent, you are modeling every sort of behavior for them so that
yes.
they will kind of pick that up and use it in their future, which for me, Love Parent functions two ways. First of all, it is a wonderful guide for parents. It's a totally different perspective for some parents out there, and I think it's one that they need. But it's also very much, the focus is also on the parent, because you're the person who is, you know, I have five sons, so I found it incredibly helpful. I, of course, subscribe exactly to everything you have down in Love Parent. We choose these things. So this is a book that does tell you, you choose the life you're going to have, and that includes some of the challenges that you come across, sibling rivalry, eating habits. I love the peer group temptations, how clever you were to put that in there, because it's such a timely issue nowadays.
Yeah.
Is that something that just flowed out as well?
Yes, it all did. It all flowed out. And when you were talking about being an example for your children, you have to remember that the words are noises coming out of our mouth, and that's never more true than it is when your children are young. Your words are noises, just noises. And they don't really mean that much to a child. It's how you speak the words. It's what you're doing yourself. That's what's really teaching your children what being here is all about. And that's what they follow. They don't really listen to the words. In fact, they don't even know what they are for a while. So they're reading your aura. I think children come here with the gift of reading your aura, and they gradually lose it as they're told things like that are impossible to do. I mean, that's certainly... I know I came here reading auras, and I know that I thought I could listen to spirit, and I started talking to spirit until I was just 5 years old when I told my sister what I was doing, and she went ballistic and teased me unmercifully for weeks. And so I decided that this wasn't something I wanted to continue doing if I was going to be condemned for it. So, but I think all children come here being able to read your aura and to see you very clearly. And I think that the goal once we get here is to get that back and somehow get a hold of it again in some way, you know, either through a gift we have. Mine happens to be writing, but everybody here has a gift in one form or another, and our goal is to get back to that because it's who
right,
we are.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I really couldn't, because I'm in a fortunate position as a formerly practicing psychic. I just decided it can be incredibly burnout, and I'm not sure if this is something that you've dealt with. I think you deal with people in a kinder, gentler way, and perhaps they come to you for different things, but certainly in my experience with five sons, I know, and I've always said that children are some of the most psychic creatures on earth. Some of them want to regain their ability to help others with it. Some of them don't, and that's okay. You can be born with a gift for healing, but you have a love of architecture. Maybe you put that aside so you can follow your love for architecture rather than the healing you were born with. And while you're practicing architecture, you're administering to the people there. So you still wind up using that healing gift, but you may not retain the ability to see auras, for instance.
I think that's true. I mean, I think each person has their own guidance system within and knows where they need to go, and we just need to support whatever direction they choose, that's all. Because the soul always, you know, it isn't really about the picture of what we see in life. It's about what is happening emotionally, how that person is growing emotionally, and they know what they need in order to grow. And we sometimes even need to go through pain in order to grow, and that's, you have to trust that when other people are going through pain that it's necessary for their growth or it wouldn't be happening.
And that's something that's very difficult for parents to appreciate. I think that's one of the great things about Love Parent is that you're helping the parent and the child at the same time, no matter what age they're in. You're helping them to accept that pain will be involved. It's a part of learning. If we only
yes.
knew, you know, sitting in flowered fields petting cute fuzzy puppies all day long with butterflies everywhere, I don't know that we would learn as much as we do whenever we're in pain. But I'm interested, did you recall any incidents that helped you write this book whenever your children were younger?
Well, all the chapters that are in the book, I've been through in one way or another, I think, because I don't think you can write about something unless you have some kind of personal experience with it. And so I guess that... I think everybody's child is one time or another goes through one of these one part of the phase of what it's all about. One of the biggest ideas I found when I was writing the book was about the idea of children becoming responsible as soon as they're old enough to understand the consequences of what they do. And I think that they can't be too young to teach that, because as soon as they're old enough to push a child or bully, or they're old enough to steal something, they're old enough to understand the consequences, and they're old enough to take responsibility for it. And I think if we forced our children to become accountable for what they did when they're young, it's much easier to learn those lessons when you're young than it is to learn them when you're 30. And all of a sudden you're fired from a job because you refuse to take responsibility for what you've done. And so I think that it's the lessons that we learn along the way can all be learned and started when we're very young. And that was one of the ideas that was most impactful for me, because I realized that it's a great gift. What you want for your children is for them to grow up and be responsible human beings who are fulfilling themselves. And the way you do that is by teaching them the lessons when they're really, really young about what it means to be an autonomous human being who can make choices one way or another.
And choices that impact others.
Yeah, well, and it impacts self.
Right.
And therefore impacts self, because whatever you give to others and however you treat others is what you get back.
And teeny tiny little eyes are watching every interaction that you have.
Absolutely.
And so what you do with other people very much reveals who you are. Do you have any thoughts, though, on the, and this is a bit controversial, and I understand if you don't necessarily want to address it, but I just have to ask. Instant gratification seems to be something that's becoming more prevalent in our society and has been for some time. I guess I always wonder whenever I see some of the school shootings and some of the awful, terrible things that happen day after day, if perhaps we're not teaching our children the responsibility maybe we should have modeled for them.
Well, here's what I believe. I believe that every generation has its own particular challenges. And if this is a challenge that the younger generation now has, then they are here to live this challenge. I really believe that you choose when you come into the game of humanness, and you choose if you come even to planet Earth, and you choose the planet that has the challenges that you want to go through. So if a generation has a certain number, certain challenge to deal with, then they're here because in some way that is going to benefit their growth, and that's what they need to learn. They need to learn something about it. I really believe that, and that's where the trust has to come in the older generations. They have to trust that that young people are not dummies. They aren't here. They aren't any less smart or less wise for their journey than we were for our journey. And they've come when the challenges that they need are going to be present. And that's the only way I can't make sense out of life unless I believe that.
Well, that and, you know, one of my fundamental principles, which is echoed in Love Parents, one of my fundamental beliefs in raising all five of my children, which one is 25, so I mean they range in range in age from 25 to 12. One of the things that I've always tried to model is respect them as an equal human being, but part of that respect means that they must respect you as much as you respect them. And I think Love Parent does address that. You have to believe that they are wise individuals. You know, it immediately comes to mind when you say, you know, we have to trust that they're able to take care of themselves. We have to think about them maybe they may be still be children, but they're still due respect, because every ounce of respect we show into a child is going to help them in their life ultimately. At least that's my belief. I think, though, that Love Parent could also be a great, you know, one of the, when you speak about this generation and what they need to learn, and there is a lesson there. And Love Parent is something I think that could help them a great deal, because it provides the guidelines for raising healthy, well-adjusted children who get the respect they deserve and thus give it. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, it does. And I think that when we were having our private conversation before the show opened, and we were talking about the technology that's all new now and how to deal with it. And I think that's something that fits right in with this conversation, in that all the children in the world today have come into this world at a time when all this technology is happening. So we have to trust that whatever they're learning about that is important to their journey. And whether or not we may look at it and say, what are they doing buried in their iPads or whatever they are? But the thing is, they know why they've come here and why they're in this era and why they want to be there for a reason. And this is where it's really, I mean, you can spend your whole life worrying about what other people are doing and what they're exposed to and why they're and what the world is coming to. But, you know, it just leaves you a mess. And you have to trust that other people have chosen wisely for themselves. They know why they are here and what they're here to do. Their soul is guiding them the whole way and has them where they need to be with the people they need to be with, because that's what they're here for. That's what they're here to do. And for some reason, they have chosen to be here at this time, and we don't have to understand why, and we don't have to try to change them. They have to live it themselves.
But I love that the best. I mean, I would say that's my favorite point of Love Parent. You don't need to change your children. They, you know, respect for me is not, to my children at least, is you must find your own way. Therefore, I encourage them, if they disagree with me, to respectfully disagree with me, to outline their points, and I will listen, and my mind's been changed more than once because I trust them to be who they are authentically, and I don't want them to be me. Now, me personally, I think that's the biggest mistake a parent can make, and that is they are not chips off the old block. They are here for themselves to learn something, to touch other people's lives, hopefully in a positive way, and we parents can help with that. But they are not meant to be copies of us. They have unique strengths, unique weaknesses, and we're there to help gently make them aware of both. And I would think you would agree with me on that. That's
yes,
but what
yes,
do you
I
think?
Do.
That's my biggest mistake for parents. I think the worst thing you can do is require that your child be you or hold your political or religious or any other beliefs that you hold strongly because they need to form their own way. But that's what I think is the biggest mistake some parents make. What do you think is the biggest mistake some parents
make? I think that's a good one. It's disrespectful to mistrust that your child has his own priorities or her own path to live. That's disrespectful. That's saying that you're denying that the child is an individual entity that has come here for its own journey, and that's disrespectful. And that's disrespectful regardless of who you're talking about. You know, children may come here with a very short journey, may have a disease, they may be killed when they're very young, and that is still that soul's journey, and it still needs to be respected. And it's not something... If just because a soul decides to be here for a short time doesn't mean anything's gone wrong. There's a reason and a purpose behind it, and the soul believes in what it is, and therefore it's worthy of respect. And
I think, I couldn't agree with you more. I think we have, you and I, and I know there are many people like us with our belief system out there, but I think we have a unique perspective in that, and we were talking before we came on air, in that I think we have a unique perspective in that even if tragedy befalls, we are aware there's purpose behind it. So take, for instance, when you say if a child dies in a tragedy, there's a very human part of me that mourns that shakes my head, that has been known to tear up because of that. And then there's the other side of me that says, well, and look, now the parents are involved in a cause helping, or they're making legislation against whatever happened to that child. And, of course, we know where that child is. That makes a difference, don't you think?
Yes, I think that it gives you peace of mind. We were talking about that before, too. It gives you, if you can let go of what you think other people are supposed to be living, you gain a lot of peace of mind. And however you release others to their journey, you release yourself to your own journey. And so if you are thinking of other people and their journeys in terms of respect and peace and giving them the peace and the honor that they deserve, then you give the same thing to yourself. It's what you bring to yourself.
When adolescence is concerned, that's the time when I think it can be gotten through, and I think you beautifully advocate for this because there's a whole chapter on adolescence. But I think it all comes down to if you respect them, even when they get, and we've both been there, I know we have. I'm not certain if your children were the same as mine, but there is a teenage stage they go through where what you say, you may be met with an eye roll. That's okay with me. I mean, I don't mind as long as the mouth doesn't expound too snappily at me, because again, that's when I say, if you aren't respecting me, how can I respect you? But I think it's to be expected, and it is a joyful thing sometimes to see your child shrug their nose, or shrug their nose. How do you do that? I think some people can do it. Shrug their shoulders is what I meant to say. If you are anatomically gifted and can shrug your nose, please contact me. Thank you very much. I just like to see it once. That said, I find it liberating whenever my child doesn't necessarily agree with me. Then I know I've done my job, because I don't want them to agree with me all the time.
Yeah. Well, I think adolescence is a great time to know, to refresh yourself in terms of the idea that your children must be responsible for themselves. Because if they make, I mean, children are going to test whatever they're going to test, and there isn't too much you can do about it if they're determined to test drugs or whatever. But if you tell them that they are responsible for what happens and the choices they make, you know, if you try it, then it's on you. You're deciding to try it. If you make them responsible, then they, when something goes wrong, they know they made the choice, and therefore they can make it differently. If they're rebelling against you, because they act out in an unhealthy way to get back at you, they won't want to quit, because to quit would be to make you right and them wrong. And so this is where this responsibility issue comes in. If they're responsible and they know that they have chosen to do something on their own, no one pushed them, they didn't do it out of rebellion, then they're free to choose differently when things don't go well. And this is all part of, you know, responsibility, being responsible for yourself. After all, when bad things happen to teenagers, if you tell them right along, you know, if you choose to drink when you're driving, it isn't your friends that are going to suffer. You're the one who's going to suffer. It isn't your friends who are going to be kicked out of this house. It's you that's going to be kicked out of this house. You know, when you put it down on that line with children, they become responsible just out of a sense of self-preservation.
And one thing you have to do is follow through. I mean, if it's the chance they take, you want to be a person of your word. And I would think if there's any significant rebellion, this is me, I'm no parenting expert, I'm not you, but if there's rebellion at some point, I would think perhaps you've not respected them enough. Because I don't think that has to be a part of the equation. Rebellion to me is whenever you don't agree with me. If you don't agree with me, that's okay. Because the beauty of adolescence, I think the beauty that people don't always look at is that they're becoming people. Do you know what I mean? They're so much fun as babies, and they're learning every day, and you get to sit and read with them and enjoy as they grow. But when they cross the line into adolescence, these are intelligent, you know, girls and boys that you can have a real conversation with about any variety of subjects. So if there's rebellion, you're not following a respectful model. And respectful, by the way, is not licensed to give them iPads, iPods, every single thing that they want. That's spoiling, in my opinion. It is being respectful of their choices and their personhood, I guess. And I think in adolescence, there's no better way to do that than to speak with them, to say, well, what's your opinion? What do you think of that? Even watch the nightly news together. What do you think of that? Do you think that was the right call? Read the paper together. Yes, they're going to shrug their shoulders. I mean, it's just going to happen. But you get a sense of joy from knowing this person, we're both females, that you carried inside your body and gave birth to and held, is growing into a splendid little person with his or her own views. That, to me, is really the joy of parenthood. But have you felt the same? What's the joy for you being a parent?
Well, at this point, my children are all grown and with their own families. And I think it's seeing that they're all doing their thing, that they, you know, they're all doing something they enjoy. I think that's probably my greatest happiness, is to see them doing something they enjoy, and that they're following their own natural gift at what they do. I think that's it. I when you were talking about adolescence, I was thinking of this particular section in the book that I read over and over and over to myself because I like it so much. It's like when teenagers go into destructive directions to prove their adulthood, this isn't the time to tell them they can't be trusted to act like an adult, which is what we all do when they're growing up. This is the time to welcome them into adulthood as the same autonomous being that we are. This isn't the time to criticize their every decision and taste. It's the time to praise their individuality. This isn't the time to wonder what they're doing in their leisure hours. This is the time to believe that they are using their time constructively. This isn't the time to challenge their every belief. It's the time to welcome their opinions. This isn't the time to criticize their friends. It's the time to honor each and every one of them as a timely reflection of your children.
And I love that.
Yeah.
I just said it much more clunkily.
But you said it beautifully.
Well,
that's what made me think of this phrase, this paragraph that I like so much. And I think that that's a hard one because we tend to children all you know they come into adolescence like overnight suddenly they're different.
That's so true.
And then it's hard to remember that. Wait a minute, this is today. That was yesterday. And you know they're letting you know that they're coming into adulthood, and that's another idea that you need to respect. I do think that one thing that it's hard to remember is that if you, for instance, go to work all day and you're working with other people and you may disrespect somebody in your work day and then you come home and you have your child disrespect you and then you say to yourself, but I haven't disrespected my child, so why are they disrespecting me back? The thing is that whatever you put out into the universe as a part of your action, emotion towards other people, it returns to you. It doesn't always return to you from the people you gave it to. It just returns to you. So it could return to you through a child. It could return to you through a friend. It could return to you from someone on a bus. It doesn't, you know, the universe doesn't pick and choose that way. It just sends it back where it's appropriate.
And
so
it is.
In other words, you can be rude to someone at work during the day, and then come home and have your spouse be rude to you, and then you'll think, well, why are they being rude? I wasn't rude to her, and all of a sudden, out of the blue, she's rude to me. Well, the thing is, you've got that in your aura. It's okay to be rude.
Yeah.
And so the person
it's personal responsibility.
Yeah, the person is reading into your aura that it's okay to be rude, and so therefore they're rude to you. And this is I think one of the biggest and most important ideas in my work was when I realized that the universe thinks everything is love. Doesn't matter what you're expressing, the universe interprets it as love. So if I'm being mean to somebody, the universe is saying, "Oh, well, Betsy thinks meanness is love. So let's give her a lot of that back." And that's how
it
works.
It's a great lesson. It's a potent lesson.
It is a potent lesson. It is very powerful to realize that whatever you're putting out there or whatever you're saying is your interpretation of love, the universe is saying, wonderful, we'll just send you lots more back. That's what you love.
Yeah, that's what you're drawing to yourself. And that's, you know, I think the biggest thread that runs through every single one of your books, Walking Through Illusion, The Mirror Theory, What Happens If, Love Parent, is you've only got one person to live with the rest of your life, you. So you need to do what makes you happy, and you need to make sure that you're living up to your morals, your ethics, your guidelines, and you have to create those for yourself because they're not going to be as powerful if they're grafted on from a parent, grandparent, step-parent, as they are if your parent is strong enough to say you need to develop your own way of going on. That doesn't mean leave them on their own to experiment with their self, but it does mean granting them the freedom to be exactly who they are, no more and no less. because one day they're going to have to look in that mirror. And you don't, me, I don't want them to say, well, my mother pushed a certain political thought on me, and this is not who I am. I think that does sprout the seeds for dissatisfaction in a child. But I love the thread through every one of your books is personal responsibility. It starts with you. It ends with you. So be very careful what you put out there, as you've just said, because it's going to come back one way or another. And you described it beautifully. You don't know where it's going to come through, but it will come through for you. And on that, I have to say we're going to be back with Betsy Otter Thompson talking more about Love Parent, but we need to go to a quick break. You're listening to Lydia's Literary Lowdown right here on WGGM.
Hello, everyone. Bea Delosier here with a rundown of GGM Radio's brand new schedule. Boy, have we got some wonderful new programs with great new hosts. A little something for everyone. On Mondays at 11 a.m. Central, it's Messages of Light with Amanda Dowell for an hour of psychic chat and inspirational guests. Mondays at 7 p.m. Central, it's time for Primarily Paranormal with psychic Tina Marie. Share an hour with Tina and Bob Weber of Gulf Coast Paranormal. On the second and fourth Tuesday of every month at 8 p.m. Central, it's the Back to Brilliance Hour with Lynn Hoft and Vivian Hildebrand, an hour devoted to your spiritual growth. Wednesdays start at 11 a.m. Central with Maggie Holbeck and Crystal Clear Coaching, featuring motivational inspiration to get your life back on track. At 1 p.m. Central, join Claudia Cleary on Wednesdays with Namaste Nutrition for an hour of soothing chat all about good health, positivity, and spiritual balance. Thursdays, start your day at 9 a.m. Central with Nancy Murdoch and Mastering the Art of Joyfulness. Let Nancy and her special guests lift you out of that rut and get you back in your groove. At 8 p.m. Central, join Dr. Gregory Scott for the Light Giver Universal Healer Hour. Gregory offers spiritual education to further you along your path to enlightenment and empowerment. Fridays at 12 noon Central, it's Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Join Brenda for an hour of inspiration and motivation, featuring a lineup of today's most popular authors and guests. Friday night at 7 p.m. Central, enjoy an hour of psychic chat with spot-on reader Tasha Harris and the Angels Network. Saturdays begin at noon Central with Bea Delosier, yours truly, and the Metaphysical Edge for psychic chat and interesting guests ranging from UFO research, paranormal experiencers, and all things metaphysical. At 2 p.m. Central on Saturday, it's Audrey Quinn and My Beauty Angel, an hour created just for you with tips and tricks on how to be the best you can be with what God has given you. Sunday is a day of service here on Greater Good Ministries Radio, each week featuring a different interfaith minister bringing joy, upliftment, and unfoldment for body, mind, and spirit. First Sunday of the month is Conversations Beyond the Edge with Dr. Gregory Scott. The second Sunday of the month is the Empowerment Hour with Reverend Barbara B. Delosier. Third Sunday of the month is the Light Givers International Sunday Service and Worldwide Source a Nation Celebration. The fourth Sunday of the month is In His Presence with Evangelist Patricia Benneman. Hope you will join us live for all of our Greater Good Ministries radio programs, but if you can't be with us in person, you can hear any of our programs on demand in archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/ggmradio. And remember, all of our programs now stream live from our home site, www.ggmradio.com. Wishing everyone warmest blessings, always in love, light, and sound. Music provided by Orville Bird, musician extraordinaire. Visit him at orvillebird.com and get a hold of all of Orville's wonderful music.
Welcome back to Lydia's Literary Lowdown. I'm right back here with the lovely and hugely talented Betsy Otter Thompson talking about her book, Love Parent. Now, while we were going on the break, we were talking about believing in yourself. And this is something, when we left for break, we were talking about the thread that runs through all Betsy's marvelous books. You can find her at BetsyThompson.com. You can follow her. It's Betsy O. Thompson, right, on Twitter?
Yes. And
the quotes you put out on Facebook every day are amazing.
I'm glad you're enjoying them. I enjoy sharing them.
And you can be found on LinkedIn as well. I want to get that out there. But you know what? I really wanted to start out the second half of the show here by using a quote from the book that I think is vastly overlooked nowadays. The beauty of parenting is in knowing how to enjoy it. I think that's something that sometimes gets lost amongst the shuffle. And do you think that's particularly hard for a first-time parent who's worried about, oh, my goodness, have I sterilized the bottles? Am I nursing correctly? Is that poop normal? You know, do you think it's difficult for a first-time parent, more so than maybe someone on her third child?
Oh, sure. That's just because of the learning, that's because of the learning curve. You know, anything when you start out, at it is harder when it's just beginning, and I don't care what you're talking about, and it gets easier as you know more what you're doing and you know more about it. And also, you know, that phrase that you said about with children, it's true with your with adults too. It's a truism for the rest of your life. To honor who you are, honor your children, honor who you are, be who you are. It's no different, you know, when you're younger than when you're older.
Most and I think that's a powerful statement. And I say so because we can talk about the work of parenting, but you're saying enjoy it. But there's another thing reinforced throughout Love Parent, which is example. And one thing I think that's powerful about example is you need to treat yourself a little, parents. Moms, dads, dads, moms, don't care. You need to treat yourself every once in a while, and you need to make sure your children see it. Don't work 100 hours a week, pass out, sleep, get up, and go back to work. You need to treat yourself a little. And the reason is exactly what Betsy outlines in Love Parent, which is if you're not being a good example, do you really want your child to work 100-hour weeks, sleep, and then get up and repeat it because that's the example you've given them? No,
yes.
You don't.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You have to ask yourself, are you living in a way that you want your children to live?
And are you enjoying it? Because
yeah.
You need to have joy in your life for your children to have joy in their life. If you're depressed, you need to have that addressed. If your relationship, even your marriage, your partner, anything like that, if it is not a good relationship, you have to look at your children and say, is it what kind of example? Because I've run across this a lot in the past. What kind of example am I being to my child? Is staying in a less than perfect relationship going to mean that my son thinks that's okay or my daughter?
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I had this. I had a friend who was complaining to me about her child and how she felt her child was sacrificing her happiness. And I said to her, "And where did she learn that?"
Exactly.
And
you outline it beautifully.
Yeah, she couldn't deny it. And so this is really you know, when you follow your heart and do what makes you happy in your life, you're telling your children this is an okay path to follow. It's okay
and
to trust.
And it's how you address problems in your everyday life that they're going to see that's going to tell them how to react later. I mean, you know, they always say that daughters marry their fathers and sons marry their mothers. What kind of parent did you have, and what kind of, I don't know how to put it, what kind of unconscious cues did you get from your parent that might inadvertently be altering the way you are parenting yourself?
Yes. Well, I think we learn how to parent initially from our parents. And I can remember vividly saying to myself, oh, my God, that sounded just like my parent. I don't want to be my parent. And so, you know, that was when I thought I might need some help learning new methods of parenting, because we do learn those habits. They're really like habits. I call them habits because habits can be changed. And when you call them anything other than the habit, you make it feel like it's written in stone, and it isn't written in stone. And changing a habit is by doing something a different way than the habit was formed, because you kept repeating it over and over and over again, and then it became a habit. And so if you want to change a habit, you need to repeat a new pattern over and over and over again, and that becomes the habit. And it sounds simple, but it really is that simple. But it's a repetition thing that you have to stay after it, and you have to keep after it, and you have to remind yourself, that is a habit I want to lose, and this is a habit I want to keep, and therefore I will, you know, reaffirm that new habit and be conscious of the fact that I want to have a new pattern in my life.
And accept that you're not perfect, and you never will be, but be happy with where you are. Because that's something I think it's a pressure on parents constantly. It certainly was with my first, because I was a young, unwed mother. So I would find myself trying to be very perfect, more perfect than married mothers were, just to prove that I had earned the right to raise my son. And that was the wrong attitude. And I know you're going to agree with me on that. You know, it robbed me of enjoying parenting, and to make sure I did everything perfect. So perfection needs to be thrown out the window. You and your children are works in progress. And you said it while we were talking during the break. Everything that brought you where you are right now is something that should be celebrated. If you can look back and see the patterns in your life that brought you to this point, whether you're single, married, have children or don't, and be okay with how you got there and formulate a plan for moving forward, which is in your other books, that's a great way to go.
Yeah, it's about asking yourself, what did you learn from what happened? What was the positive result of something that you may not have been too happy with the initial thing that happened, but what was the positive that resulted from that? That's how you take your life and turn it into a positive memory of what you've experienced. Instead of reliving the drama over and over again, you ask yourself, you know, what did I learn? How did I evolve more? How did I progress in my life? What ideas did I find that were helpful? That's the kind of conversation you need to have with yourself, instead of saying, oh, I need to change, I need to be different, I need to blah, blah, you know, I need to stop this, I need to stop that. You need to ask yourself, what have I learned from who I have been? Because the way you view today is what you take with you into tomorrow, and it's much easier to look at the rest of your life from a positive viewpoint than it is to look at the rest of your life from a negative viewpoint.
Exactly. And you know, I want to go back to something you said, because you discuss siblings and sibling rivalry in your book. But something you said earlier in the interview kind of made me intrigued. Whenever you told your sister that you could speak to spirit, and she so kind of threw condemnation down on you, were you able to bridge that gap later on in your relationship with your sibling?
What I did was to shut down completely. I shut down completely. And it wasn't until the middle of my life, in a crisis time when I was almost homeless, that I reacknowledged the gift. And I got along fine with his sister. This was just like one incident in my childhood that happened, and I shut down and didn't communicate with spirit, and therefore it never came up again. And to this day, she doesn't have any interest in what I'm doing because she has different priorities and she has different interests than I have. But that hasn't prevented us from being loving sisters. I love her. I know she loves me. It's just that she has, this is where the respect idea comes in, even with your siblings. Just because she doesn't agree with me or understand what I'm doing doesn't mean she can't love me for who I am. And the same thing is true for me with her. So I didn't, it was up to me. I did not acknowledge that gift until I was almost homeless. And then I said to myself, my life has not really gone in a way that I am terribly happy about, and I seem to be repeating the same patterns over and over, and maybe my life will change if I be my authentic self. And so acknowledging this gift was my saying, I need to acknowledge my authentic self and who I am, and then let the chips fall where they may. And then my life turned around. It's like 3 weeks later. It was so quick, it was just astounding. 3 weeks later, after I began acknowledging this gift, I got a job. I had a wonderful job in the entertainment business. I stayed with my boss for the next 18 years. And in 18 years, I had turned my life around so much that I could retire and write full time. It was like a miracle. And it was all because I had said, okay, I give up. My life isn't working. So I have to be who I am and see what happens, because that's the only choice I have. Now, I don't recommend anybody going out there and getting almost homeless to find their purpose in life, but that's what happened to me. And because I had just tried so many things that hadn't worked for me, and, of course, my soul, I'm sure, is just patiently waiting for me to finally acknowledge why I came here. And then once I did, it was like it said, the universe said, okay, you're ready, we're ready, and here we go. And that's like an incredible ride ever since. But it is that moment of saying, I have to be who I am.
And did your relationship with your children change any when that transformation took place?
I think it did, yes. I think it, because I see my children now acknowledging who they are. And that's my greatest satisfaction.
But it's also a very timely message, I think, to our listeners, in that they were probably older then. So I think you gave them the expectation that you can be your authentic self at any time. There's not a time limit on it.
Yes, there is no time limit on it. I mean, it took me a long time, and it doesn't take everybody that long, but that was my individual path. It was what I had to go through to get where I needed to get, to get to that moment of just giving up. I mean, I've heard that term, you know, giving up to God before, and I never really understood what it meant, and I'm still not sure I know what it means unless I'm giving up to the God within me. That I understand, giving up to the God within me and allowing who I am to come forth and be expressed. And I remember thinking as I began to write that I finally had a voice. I finally had a voice for the first time in my life. I had a voice.
Well, that's wonderful. I mean, because it's awful to think that you went so long without feeling you had a voice.
Well, that's exactly how it was.
But that has to be motivation. Did that not serve as motivation for you to encourage people through your own writing to find theirs?
Yes, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it has to be. I mean, because everything that I've lived comes out in my writing one way or another. And I know how dramatic it can be. I mean, I think that the picture that we see, the illusion that is around us all the time, is in a constant state of flux. And so, therefore, it is just there to support our growth. And so whatever we're ready for, the picture rearranges to support whatever we're ready for. And so therefore, when I said, okay, I'm going to be my authentic self, I'm going to do this work, and I'm just going to let happen whatever happens. And then it was just like the universe heard the clue and then came in rushing in with what I needed, which was a job to support me for 18 years while I wrote. And
that's a big exclamation point. I mean, you could, that's the same difference as having somebody with a couple of those orange cones that they direct airplanes with, just guiding you right towards where you needed to be.
Yes, yes. It was amazing because I did say, I remember saying a prayer that the week after I was started the writing, and I was like, I mean, I was in a one-room apartment in California, and it was, you know, roach infested. It was, you know, the most I could afford, and even then I was having trouble making ends meet. And I remember saying a prayer that I wanted to honor the gift, I wanted to be my authentic self, and I wanted to write, and I would, but I sure needed a job to support me. And, I mean, I didn't even think of it as a prayer at the time. I was just thinking it, and 3 weeks later I had the job. I mean,
it took you exactly where you need to be, and I think that's a big message in all of your books as well, which is, and it's the most difficult thing as well, which is to trust you're being taken where you need to be.
Yeah.
That's one of the most difficult lessons. But I want to know, are you working on anything right now, and what is it? Can you give us any hints?
Well, I'm working on the third book that I self-published that I'm rewritten, and I'm going to get up on Amazon. It's called Love Human, and it's really the sequel to Love Parent. And it's just about...
Could that be more about humanity, about the people
around
you?
It's going to be, the subtitle is going to be a book about you.
Well, then that's wonderful. I can't wait to get my hands on it. I don't suppose at this early stage you have any idea of a release date, do you?
Not yet, no. I don't put that kind of pressure on myself. Since it's self-published and I can get it up on Amazon whenever I'm ready, I don't put that pressure on myself of having a deadline. I like to be able to feel that it will, when it's ready, I'll know it, and that will be the day.
And that's the biggest example. You know, there's just no hypocrisy there. I would say not putting that pressure on yourself is going to be part of the message of Love Human, which is you have to take care of you. You have to be at peace with you before you can really go out and help others. At least that's my belief. You have to be okay with who you see in the mirror every day before you can go out and expect to help others.
Yes, and I have to have the book in the kind of condition that I am so thrilled to get it out there and so excited that other people will be finding the same love that I found in writing it. I have to feel that way.
Well, it's hugely important. And, you know, self-publishing, has it turned out to be a boon to you in regards to creative control?
Yes, I've enjoyed the process very much. Now, I'm not really a techie kind of person, so my son gets the book up on Amazon for me, and then after he has it up there, then I take care of the rest. But I've enjoyed this process of self-publishing. It's forced me kicking and screaming to learn more, but that sounds like the motto of my life, kicking and screaming.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's definitely making you take on even new skills, but I'm sure some of the skills where marketing and things like that are concerned you already had.
Well, I'm enjoying that process, which is nice. It's nice. I enjoy the talking to people like you and talking about the ideas. I really enjoy that. And I think that it's a good process for people to go through who are writers, and because the whole publishing scene is very different now than it was 20 years ago, and almost everything is happening, even for publishers on the internet. So it's interesting to, I mean, I get my little check every month for the books that sell, and it's a nice feeling, and I don't have to worry about whether it's going to be deducted from the publisher's whatever they call it, that little line there that says they don't pay you according to what might be returned, and so you never get paid.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, well, and you know, but here's another thing I'd like to know, because it looks like when I look at Love Parent on Amazon, the reviews are amazing. Do you have people who get in touch with you, who maybe email you through your site, to tell you how much you've changed their lives? And what kind of impact does that have on you if and when it happens?
I have had that happen, and it feels wonderful. But it feels wonderful because it feels wonderful to know that what you're doing is helping someone else. That's a wonderful feeling. I think it's what I mean. who doesn't like to feel that their life is making an impact on other people? It's wonderful. It's wonderful.
Do you ever sit and remember that hotel room, the roach-infested hotel room, when one of those come in and think that's what it was all for?
Well, you know, even then when I was in my roach-infested room, I was trying to see the positive in life. I just had made so many decisions that had seemed to me to be, it doesn't matter what they were. At the time, I did what I, you know, we all, whatever we do in life, this is another thing that I really realized, whatever we do in life, we do it because we think it's going to bring us love. It doesn't always bring us love, but we think it's going to bring us love. No matter what we're doing, I think that's why people make decisions in their lives, because they are hoping it will bring them love. And so when I look back on my life and the decisions I made, I remind myself of that over and over, so that I don't see it in a negative way, and I remind myself I just had to go through it to understand where love really came from. And it comes from within our own.
Yeah.
Which is, yes, exactly. It comes from within our own selves. It cannot be found from anyone else or anything else on the outside of us.
Right, and I can't wait. That's one of the reasons I can't wait to read Love Human, because I know you're going to have that message in there, which is it starts with you. It ends with you. And in between, it's all about you.
Yeah.
So make the best life that you can, because everything that you decide to espouse or not espouse, you know, you have family, you have friends, you have acquaintances, they will be watching, and you can be an example, and certainly you are through your writing to other people. You never know who you impact, so be careful what impact you have.
That's true. And you, whatever impact you're making is going to be impacted upon you, and so that's the motivation to ask yourself, you know, what am I putting out there? Is it something I want back, or is it not something I want back?
Exactly, and it gives you a little more careful evaluation every time you open your mouth or take an action, and that can be, in some cases, a literal lifesaver, I think.
Yes, it can. And after a while, you get conscious, and you think of something you might want to say in a conversation, and you ask yourself, wait a minute, is that something I want someone saying about me? And when you answer the question and the answer is no, you don't open your mouth.
Yeah, very, very obvious that. Well, Betsy, I just cannot thank you enough for coming on the show, and I hope to be able to talk to you when Love Human comes out. No pressure whatsoever on you.
Well, I'll be calling you for sure.
Well, good, because I'm going to want to be talking about it, because as much as I love parent and what happens if, I just know I'm going to love human, which is probably too many loves in a sentence, but oh well. Thank you again for joining us. Cannot wait to talk to you again.
Thank you, Lydia. Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed every second.
Thank you so much. Okay, everybody, so April the 19th, well, first of all, let's just say you can find Betsy, you can find her on Twitter, Betsy O. Thompson. Okay, you can find her at BetsyThompson.com. Her books are on Kindle. You can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Find her. Look her up. Interact with her on Twitter. She's on Facebook as well. Absolutely lovely woman. And above all, if you want to improve you, the quality of your life, where you're going and what you're doing, check out her books. They are, I don't know if I want to be so bold and dramatic to say life changers, but they will definitely give you a different perspective and perhaps a needed one on improvement in your life. That said, I am so excited. April the 19th, the legendary, let me say this right, Fiki Snucker, that's her name on Twitter, also known as Tamara Mataya, is going to be joining me talking about her book, The Best Laid Plans, her compilation. Sorry, I just got a voice in my ear telling me I have very little time left. That said, The Best Laid Plans, that she's also done a compilation with some best-selling authors, and she's got a new book coming out in May. I cannot wait to talk to her. It's going to be, you know what, honestly, next week it's going to be worth tuning into just to see me pause every single time I say Fiki Snucker. If you haven't checked out her blog, she's absolutely... If you do not follow Tamara on Twitter, you should absolutely do it. And before I go, I want to offer a sincere and heartfelt apology to Lori Colombo Dunham, who is supposed to appear a couple weeks ago, I couldn't have her on because I was down with a debilitating migraine. I'm so sorry, Lori. I will be booking you for certain with your book, Reflections on the Ring. Everybody, have a great couple weeks. We will be right back here on WGGM with Lydia's Literary Lowdown featuring Tamara Mataya on April the 19th. Have a great weekend, everybody.